Our next speaker is Ken Faust, senior technologist and researcher at Intel Corporation and chair MIPI Sensor Working Group. His presentation is titled Evolving MIPI I3C for New Usages and Industries. A little bit about Ken. He is a sensor technologist and researcher with Intel Corporation and serves as chair of the MIPI Sensor Working Group. Ken has contributed significantly to the sensor working group and the development of the I3C specification. Ken also received a Distinguished Service Award for his contributions to MIPI Alliance and continues to speak at numerous events on MIPI's behalf. Here is Ken.
Great. Thank you. Hopefully everyone can hear me. Thanks for having me. I've had the pleasure of leading the sensor working group effort since before it was a sensor working group. It was an investigation group, and then of course became the working group, where we set forth over several years to develop I3C. So I'm excited today to talk about that evolution that kind of brought us to today and what's driving us forward in I3C development in the future. So how am I going to do that? Well, let me introduce you to I3C simply because I don't want to assume that everyone's familiar with it, as I hope everyone is by now. But just in case, I'll give a little introduction, but also a current status, where we are as a working group that's developing I3C within MIPI, and then talk a little bit about some of the industries and usages beyond mobile and beyond sensing that not only continues to drive us forward, but we leveraged in developing I3C v1.0and v1.1 that we're working on now to really future-proof I3C and make sure it's ready for the 21st century. And then also finally, just I want to walk through the timeline a bit and kind of the milestones that got us here today as well. So how I3C Basic, I3C v1.0, and v1.1 have evolved, what they are, how they kind of sit relative to each other, and then what's next, with a little bit of a call to arms for people to come forward and be part of the evolution of I3C going forward. So, if I rewind back to the beginning, what were our ambitious goals for MIPI I3C? Well, it was really for ubiquitous low-speed interfacing for the 21st century. If you looked at how things such as sensors connected to application processors or CPUs inside compute systems, they would connect over a fragmentation of interfaces, but the important thing was that they were ubiquitous interfaces. These are interfaces that people have been using for a long time. I squared C, serial peripheral interface, SPI, UART, etc. But we, of course, from our vantage point, and a vantage point that the developers of those interfaces decades ago even didn't have, our vantage point was not only a MIPI vantage point, but in what I think was an ambitious MIPI vantage point, was to look beyond mobile as well. So, not only in the mobile world where I3C would just connect to an application processor and a phone, but that it would have a role in XR or AR, VR. It would have a role in tablets. It'd have a role in cars and autonomous vehicles and wearables, and all that is the that is the Internet of Things. So I think we had ambitious goals, and I think we've met them with confidence, actually. I touched on the vision a little bit before getting to this slide, but let me talk about it a little more. This today was still kind of the dominating problem statement for us in developing I3C, and that's that there are a lot of peripheral things. In this case, rewind a handful of years ago for us, these things were typically sensors that you need to connect to some kind of central processing. Or maybe you can bunch some of them up and hub them, but still connect to some central processing like an AP or application processor, as an example. You did a landscape of how those are connected, you would see that it was fragmented. SPI, I squared C, UART, et cetera. It was just driving way too many GPIO on this host. The GPIOs would be used for the interfaces themselves, clock lines, data lines, but they'd be used for interrupts, right? So each one of these things would be just intelligent enough to look at the data it's generating, maybe compare it against a threshold, or maybe make an inference. And when a certain goal is met, or a threshold is crossed, or a characterization is made, it would fire an interrupt to the host asynchronously, but out of band. Also, the host would use I/O connected back to the device for reset, for power management, other functions. And so this was very expensive. Sensing is an important subsystem, but that would drive a lot of expense in the system. So we dared to think that we could connect all of these devices simply over a two-wire interface, work to internalize GPIO that would be used for interrupts, that would be used for reset and other types of things. And so this drive to reducing pin count still moves us forward today. So if you're familiar with I3C, you would know these kinds of things exist, but if not, I recommend you dive into the specification, contact MIPI experts on the subject. You'll see we've achieved this in multiple ways, by, for one, maintaining I2C compatibility. It was very important to have some kind of evolutionary path from what exists today to where we'd like to be tomorrow. So these I2C devices can exist with our I3C devices. And then, as I mentioned, add an in-band interrupt capability, the ability for devices to interrupt the host over the two wires that already exist, provide a common command code environment, et cetera. So this was the original I3C vision, and it still does drive us today. Let's look at it a little more deeper for a moment. And this is approximately as deep as I'm going to go, actually, for this discussion. I look forward to this to be an opportunity to do a little storytelling, frankly. So I've already indicated that I3C is a two-wire interface. That is great, and it's multi-drop. So if you have one device connected to it, two, three, four, it's still a two-wire interface. That's great. But we've brought forth several key features to address historical pain points. And these really quickly differentiate I3C from the incumbents. I mentioned in-band interrupt, dynamic addressing. In incumbent interfaces, you may have a static address methodology, which means the entire world has to fit into a static address space. Or maybe, like in the case of a serial peripheral interface, you have a chip select line, which is dedicated to addressing a device. You have four devices connected, that's four pins. It gets very expensive. We support multi-master, standardized commands, a time control capability, both synchronous and asynchronous, which is great. So of course, if you internalize interrupts, then you need to have some way to correlate back to when that interrupt was generated on the peripheral device itself, because you do not have a dedicated GPIO to do that. So interrupts may be queued, and there could be some latency incurred. So we have capabilities to both handle timing control or time synchronization from an asynchronous set of events, or you can synchronize the devices. So you can align them in time to have their data ready, and then the master can just go out and pull from it. It's very, very valuable. We have this notion of hot join. So devices can go completely powered off the bus, and then it can re-enumerate itself on the bus. When power is reapplied, it could be unplugged, it could be plugged back in, and we have an enumeration scheme to get the devices assigned their appropriate dynamic address. And of course, we've addressed error detection and recovery. There's both slave and master schemes. So this is a bit of a visual, I'd mentioned we maintain I2C compatibility, so legacy I2C devices can exist with MIPI I3C devices, whether basic slaves or devices that would like to be masters as well. We call them secondary master for support multi-mastering. From a power and performance standpoint, this is really where I3C starts to shine when you start comparing its power draw and its various speed modes to the incumbent I2C. And then conversely, the maximum achievable data rates relative to I2C, and this is FM mode, so 400 kilohertz, which is probably the most popular implementation. So we're achieving data rates nearing 40 megabits per second over the various modes, but extremely efficiently by taking advantage of push-pull capabilities versus open drain, as well as leveraging as many edges as possible by going with double data rate and ternary symbol transcoding as well. So what's the current status? Well, V1.0 has been released. Peter Lufkin, who spoke before the break, had mentioned that's been out for 2 years approximately. I3C Basic, which he also mentioned, is released this week. Interoperability has been confirmed, so we have held interoperability sessions at, five? Sorry, I don't recall the exact number, face-to-face events. So we've had many, many companies come in, we build the test matrix of masters and slaves devices, and we confirm their ability to interop implementing I3C. So these have been great MIPI-sponsored plug fests that we've been able to have. We're developing a conformance test suite, which is a document basically to guide testing and interoperability for the ecosystem. So take every requirement inside the spec and write a test for it. It's pretty dry work, but we're doing it within the working group. We're authoring a system integrator application note that should be released soon. At its very base, I3C is very simple, but if you want to take advantage of all of its advantageous features, you may need a little bit of help. And so the system integrator app note is developed to do just that. There currently is an FAQ that exists for I3C. We're revising that to support upcoming features, and we're finishing up what we call I3C V1.1, where we're clarifying ambiguities and fixing editorial bugs. very common when you develop a first version of a specification. You're going to identify those and want to fix those. And of course, they come from an ecosystem that's adopting I3C. So the feedback that we get, as well as our own interoperability sessions, which yield that kind of information. Then lastly, we're adding a lot of great new features or capabilities, you could say, for V1.1, and we'll talk about those a little bit. But also important is we're looking at capabilities beyond the mobile industry. So we're looking at the Internet of Things through things like collaborating with the ecosystem through kind of birds of feather discussions. And the intent is to roll back learnings into the future of I3C development. Like one thing about mentioning IoT or the Internet of Things is it's very broad with a lot of verticals, and it can mean many things to many different companies or individuals. And so kind of pulling the signal out of the noise that is the IoT and turning that into really key features to continue to evolve I3C is something that we're turning even more focus towards. High-performance compute or servers is another area potentially of opportunity for I3C, and in addressing that, MIPI is driving liaisons with groups, which of course these are groups that work with various forms of compute devices or across the spectrum of compute devices, but high-performance compute is certainly one of them. And so, that kind of relationship can result in, new requirements coming back into I3C for future development, or simple ways to bind I3C to their use case, and with a little bit of effort can enable adoption in that use case, possibly without even changing I3C for it. That's great. And automotive is well. So automotive is one that I want to discuss a little more on the next slide to jump into, because this definitely presents new challenges, and it's something that we're just starting to think more about beyond what Peter Lufkin referred to, in that organically MIPI fits into automotive, right? The display interfaces, the camera interface, just fits into automotive anyways. And so we want to watch that closely and be ready for it. So what are some of the opportunities? Well, this I think as you've gone through the day and as you go through the day, the slide may become, or this picture may become more and more familiar with you. But there's something that I just wanted to point out. And that's we identify or classify I3C as a control and data interface. If the payloads are small enough, such as from a sensor, an accelerometer, a gyroscope, et cetera, you can send that data over I3C. That's what it's developed for. But also, it's a very good sideband interface, control interface, manageability interface, which is what it can be used for, and I'll talk about this a little more, for cameras. So that really is what I'm trying to identify here or share here. And when you look at this diagram, you may have it used specifically to transport sensor data. Well, that's a pretty long trace all the way back to this hub here. I3C isn't developed for that. Or maybe it's used for control and manageability of a camera, which connects into some kind of other network bridge or hubbing mechanism. So when we start to think about that, we see, I think, a lot of natural challenges for anyone trying to develop a technology for automotive. Challenges related to functional safety, reliability, security, electromagnetic interference. It's a very different system than a handheld or let's say a personal computer. Long reach, as I alluded to. And then also policies. SIG policies, for instance, and collaboration policies and liaisons that are needed to make sure that the interface is ready and that the ecosystem is ready to adopt it. So now we talked a little bit about industries. Let's talk a little more about usages beyond sensing, right? I3C is developed in the sensor working group. You'd seen kind of our chart or what drove us, and that was sensing. But there's an important part of our charter, and that is maintain a relevant feature set and scope. And so you can't sit still. You have to keep your ear to the ground or keep listening. You have to keep collaborating within industries you're already working in, adjacent industries, et cetera. So in doing that, there's several notable usages which have just come out organically over the last year or so, and are evolving I3C forward, and of course, have resulted in things such as I3C Basic existing, and in I3C V1.1 being what it is. And so these are, Peter before the break had mentioned that there has been a lot of great collaboration between the working groups in MIPI. And I3C is one of those collaborative interfaces and collaborative discussions because I think of its feature set and really it being targeted as both a data and control interface. So there's been collaboration with the camera working group on the MIPI camera control interface. There's been collaboration with the display working group that's been focusing on touch. And so there are specifications for touch over I3C. The debug working group, the ability to leverage I3C to advance closed chassis debug capabilities. And then also server or high performance compute manageability. So let's talk a little bit more about these. So I grouped the MIPI ones, the ones that directly came out of MIPI working group efforts together. So let's talk about these. So on the left here, you have a host, some kind of central compute for a device. Let's say it's a smartphone or some kind of smart device. Of course, we already talked about sensors connecting over I3C. That was how we started. Well, MIPI CSI 2.2.1 supports camera control interface over I3C. Leveraging the fact that devices in the camera module or in the host can interrupt in an in-band manner, and leveraging its speed and capabilities and common command codes. And that speed can open up opportunities for always-on imaging. Low-resolution image data could be transported over I3C. Certainly, if you look at in the Internet of Things, there's still a lot of usages for VGA or sub-VGA cameras even. They tend to transport data over serial peripheral interface. I3C could be used there. Touch. So there's a lot of fragmentation in the touch controller industry. Known interfaces are used. Proprietary interfaces are used. I really commend the display working group in MIPI for identifying this use case and really seeing that for certain amounts of unprocessed touch data, small amounts, for maybe lower resolution or low pixel count unprocessed, or for processed touch data on large screens, I3C can be used as a transport in its SDR or HDR modes. And then debug. So there's a MIPI debug for I3C effort going on with the plan to use I3C and its proliferation across platforms, which is already happening, as a closed chassis kind of entry point for debug over I3C. So I want to talk a little bit more as well about the system manageability use case, which is emerging and has resulted actually in a liaison with DMTF for a transport protocol binding spec. And I'll talk a little bit about that here. So take any arbitrary compute system. This doesn't have to be a phone or a PC or a server, just anything arbitrary that has a lot of peripherals that need to be attached, a lot of things that can be managed. Some of these things can provide data itself. Some of them just need management. Maybe they need firmware pushed to them. Maybe they need configuration done to them. Well, not all of these need to connect over one interface. And historically, those interfaces have been fragmented between I2C and SM bus and PCI Express and a lot of different interfaces. So if you look at the stack, though, eventually it gets pulled together by a transport protocol such that whatever the interface is abstracted. It doesn't matter. And so if you create or bring a new unique interface to the market that has the advantages that I3C has, it's pretty easy to make it such that this entire manageability scheme can just evolve and continue to grow unaffected without change, as long as you provide that shim or binding for that new hardware interface. So, as I mentioned, it's very fragmented. There's uses of bridges and connectors, et cetera, but there's no reason that I3C could not be one of those interfaces in these higher performance growing compute, larger compute systems. And of course, what would make that happen is that it would be shimmed or bound to it through a spec. So simple binding protocol, transport protocol over I3C spec could be used to do such that, you know, exactly that. It doesn't need I3C to change. All it takes is nurturing a liaison, collaborating on what is needed to create that shim, and of course publishing it in the appropriate SIG. So these kinds of opportunities, as a chair of the working group and someone that concerns himself with the ecosystem for I3C, with adoption of I3C, these opportunities are great, and I constantly look for them for us to collaborate on. So, I have enough time. I'd like to talk about how, in a bit more detail, how we got to where we are today, in case I've lost people at this point. So 2013 was when the MIPI Sensor Working Group was formed, and we began developing I3C v1.0, primarily focused on a focus sensor interface for sensor usages, but with consideration for other industries and usages. Published that for 2017, and then we started what turned out to be several parallel activities. One being ongoing development of collateral for support. So this includes, like I mentioned, the CTS, System Integrator App Note, interop sessions, and DevCon. That is ongoing. That is the kind of thing that I think we will be working on consistently as we move forward. V1.1 development started almost immediately. The demand for I3C V1.0 became so large as we were trying to finish it. And for the engineers in the room, I think you all know that feeling of getting something ripped out of your hands before you really want to let it go. But when there's enough demand, that happens. And so we had several things we just knew we wanted to do to I3C as soon as we got 1.0 out. So we did that in V1.1. New features for mobile, but also more mobile-influenced features. We've been establishing these industry liaisons. Peter mentioned JEDEC and Visa. I've mentioned what we've started with DMTF for an I3C over MCTP binding spec. And then more recently, a shorter activity was that Peter mentioned was development of I3C Basic inside the I3C Basic ad hoc working group for its slimmed down set of features, close alignment with SIGs and the royalty-free offering. So we have great support from MIPI for these activities, great contributors inside the working group. We really do prioritize supporting the ecosystem and liaisons and working in a or contributing to a working group like this certainly goes beyond just the technical written word inside the documents. So the last thing I just want to do briefly, and this is an eye chart, I'm not going to go through this in great detail. With respect to V1.0, basic, V1.1, you really need to gain access to the material, review it for yourself. This is a little eye chart that I wanted to show or really establish kind of a baseline. There's some fundamental capabilities within I3C that just exist, did from day one, and are in all of these. But quickly, they really start to differentiate themselves. And I really want to draw focus to I3C V1.1, really the flagship main trunk of I3C that we're developing in the sensor working group, and all of its great new capabilities. So this is what I'd like to just focus on quickly. So we're adding a new HDR mode, which we call bulk transport, which leverages double data rate, but is even more efficiently packed forms of data. Grouped addressing, so the ability to take a set of I3C devices that are connected and group them together under one address, so you could broadcast messages or send configuration or initialize to groups of devices on your bus. A device-to-device data transfer, a way for, with the help of the master, for device one and device two, let's say, to tunnel information back and forth to each other without having to be full I3C master devices. They don't have to, for instance, have the ability, or they don't have to have a precision clock in order to drive the clock. So the master facilitates the tunneling, but it really is a direct, ends up being a direct device-to-device transfer. Another exciting great feature, multi-lane for speed. So I3C, like I2C, is just a two-wire interface, one lane. We're adding support and guidelines for taking both the standard data rate mode and DDR to double and quad lane. So this is very exciting. And then one last capability, so monitoring device early termination. The ability for device to be enabled to interrupt large data transfers if the master has basically said or has determined that its data, though it may be small, has higher priority than the large payload that's trying to be transmitted across the bus currently. So I just wanted to kind of include this in here so people can get a good relative understanding of what's going on, and certainly plug I3C v1.1, which is what we're trying to finish up now. So lastly, what's next for I3C? So we're ramping up discussion on the next evolution of I3C beyond v1.1. There's a lot of discussion on that here in Seoul within the working group. And so I would say if there's a general theme for that, it's to maybe slow things down a little bit, let I3C exist in the ecosystem, let the adoption continue, let all of the usages continue, let's collaborate, let's form liaisons, et cetera, and build a new strong set of requirements for the future for I3C. Of course, that doesn't mean we don't automatically have capabilities that we're considering, associated with automotive requirements, speed increases, new multi-lane uses. So if you've added the additional lines for speed in moments where you don't need the speed, how else could you use those lines to your advantage? As I mentioned, industry liaisons, looking at new PHY approaches. I3C is a single-ended two-wire interface, which has its physical limitations, as many know. And things like potentially standardized connectors, and then refining features. We're always interested in feedback on what's out there now and what's coming, if there needs to be refinement or even clarifications. So please, if you're interested, join us now. This is an exciting time to be part of I3C's evolution and just generally to be part of MIPI. Any questions?
Any questions for Ken? So being the host has its advantages. I had a preview of Ken's presentation. Oh. And I jotted down a couple of questions for him.
42.
That's the wrong answer. It's actually 36. Oh. All right. What new features are coming to MIPI I3C? Oh. I think you talked about that a little bit, but...
Sure, yeah. I can talk about some exciting ones. I think certainly multi-lane, which I discussed, is exciting, because the ability to take an interface that's, in DDR can get you, just for simplicity's sake, 25 megabits per second, and just to add a line to double that to 50, and then... add two more, which now you're essentially at what people adopt for a SPI, and you can get up close to 100 megabits per second, and really compete head to head in the higher speed serial peripheral interface usages. But then also, as I mentioned, what we're looking at kind of going forward is once the justification is there to add those additional lines potentially for I3C, how else you can use them.
Great, thank you. Again, yes, we have a question.
Yes.
So right, hang on a minute. We'll get you the mic.
Thank you for your presentation.
Sure.
So my question is, currently, one of my areas is HDMI, and as you know, the HDMI uses I2C as an interface, and there is some limitation. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm just wondering, as you vision this one as a higher speed interface, mm-hmm. and you are visioning this one as supporting legacy interface, I2C as well. So my question is, first, how you handle those kind of interoperability issues with the legacy I2C?
Yeah.
And secondly, if you are really trying to penetrate into that interface for the IEEE or whatever, whatever, I3C. So then what kind of idea or plan do you have in your mind for the to apply for the not inside the box but the box to box application?
Bus to bus. Yeah, interesting. So for those in here, two questions. I think one is what have we done to address I2C interoperability and compatibility, and then looking at HDMI was an example, I3C over cabling or long reach. So I'll go to the I2C one first. And that's actually another, if you care about that topic, I recommend viewing the DevCon 2017 presentation I'd done. I believe there may be a YouTube video for it as well, where I do talk about really the key topics in our system integrators app note, which is coming out. And a big topic is how to, as a system integrator, develop a system which has I2C and I3C devices that coexist. And also, if you happen to be a provider or developer of devices that are I2C devices, what can you do to be a better resident on the I3C bus? So we've highlighted a few things, certainly, that are old legacy I2C either requirements or allowed features that you either definitely should include, one of them being a 50 nanosecond spike filter inside a legacy I2C device. So when we run I3C at 12.5 megahertz, that speed is outside of the spike filter of the legacy I2C devices. And then the other is for example, in I3C, we strongly prefer a driven clock as opposed to an open drain clock. So if you're familiar with I2C, some devices may use clock stretching. We do not allow I2C devices which clock stretch if you're using a driven clock. So little things like that, we're very clear about it in the specification and in the collateral that we have, like my DevCon presentation, to kind of talk about how we address that coexistence and compatibility. And then the other one, so cabling, that presents many many challenges, of course. The connector itself, the cabling itself, what is the cable material, is it twisted pair, things like that, as well as what is the length? Is it HDMI is interesting because it could be a pretty long length. But the good thing about I3C is that though it's single-ended, it's a single-ended interface and has its limitations and challenges, those limitations and challenges are very very well understood and very easily modeled physically. So we specify in the electricals basically a PHY that would be ideal for a mobile device, but we don't set limits to keep you from let's say using a stronger drive on the clock and data lines if you need to support a stronger capacitive load. But one challenge we tried to address with developing I3C was how much of I2C goodness do we like, and then how much of it has just been bad. So when you are using I2C in a handset or something very small, those devices have drivers built to drive lines through test equipment and television, CRT television sets, 400 puff loads. We really tried to focus on, well, how can we define a PHY that is extremely efficient and low power and low cost and appropriate for mobile, while keeping it open on the high end such that people could just simply model what would be required of the devices to exist over a cable or over a larger network. So I hope that gets close to addressing your question.
Thank you. Any more questions? We have time for one more question. All right. So I have a question.
Okay.
And you might have touched on this a little bit, but can you tell us the motivation for developing I3C basics, the basics?
Sure. Well, I assume most people were here for Peter's presentation. I think he touched on that extremely well. I would say the most valuable part about it as a specification is it focuses a developer towards that real key baseline capability of I3C that is shown to be most broadly adopted and is most often interop tested. And so we kept, as way the document's created, it has the entire table of contents of I3C v1.0, and it points to the optional things that aren't there and really points you to MIPI to become a member and gain access to those features. But I think how it focuses, the opportunity to focus the specification to a baseline set that would help grow adoption was really key, one of the key things for me. And then, of course, we had the opportunity to liaise closely with JEDEC and kind of roll their feedback into it as well from a feature and policy standpoint.
Great. Thank you so much, Ken.
Awesome.
Really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.